It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday the 16th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, popular messaging app Viber launched something new for some of its 200 million users. Three games that you can play within the Viber app along with your Viber friends. Viber lets you do voice calling and send each other stickers, which are like fancier emoji. People love stickers almost as much as they love messaging apps these days. As one venture capitalist told me, communication is a product that never goes bad. So why throw games into the mix? Let's ask our friend at CNET, Lindsay Turrentine. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So we've heard a lot about WhatsApp in the last year. We've heard about Snapchat, but I have less of a sense of the size and success of Viber. This was a company that was actually bought by a Japanese company earlier this year. How big is it?
It's pretty large, especially outside of the United States. It definitely has well over 100 million users. It was founded in Israel. It's got followings and pockets around the world that are very large.
Why is this company introducing games? Does it make money on users this way?
You know, a lot of different social platforms, and you could call Viber a messaging platform, but it's definitely social. It relies on you cultivating your contact list. The success of that platform depends on the activity on the platform. So the more conversation you do on that platform, the more successful it's going to be. Games are one way to keep contacts on a platform. So if you're going to Viber 4 times a day because you're totally addicted to their game, you're much more likely to be reminded that it's there so that when you want to write a message, you're doing it through Viber instead of one of the many competitors to Viber.
I have to say, I have memories of being annoyed by Farmville and like the dinosaur egg game on Facebook and stuff, but I have to ask, is this just further proof that no matter what, eventually if a social app or a company gets big enough, it basically just wants to be Facebook?
What's interesting about Viber essentially following Facebook is that games on Facebook are not that big a deal anymore. And yet, every once in a while, somebody will make a huge blockbuster game and everybody's just hoping that they can create that blockbuster. But it looks like the games that are being released for Viber are not that different from, you know, a Bejeweled Blitz or any kind of bubble popping game. So I think that it may keep a few core users more active, but I don't think it's going to be a wild success on its own.
Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of CNET.com. Lindsay, thank you.
Thank you.
Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that couldn't have happened without the support from listeners like you. So please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. The Sony Pictures hack is still a contentious topic for everyone whose personal information and email correspondence is being revealed. This week, the company's lawyers sent letters to various media outlets asking them to stop publishing the fruits of the data breach leaked by the hacking group called Guardians of Peace. And we mentioned in yesterday's show about how internal emails exposed by the Sony hack gave a window into a huge debate. Whether or not Google, or as Sony's coded emails seem to refer to it, Goliath, should be doing more to protect the content of big movie studios by punishing pirating websites in search results. Today, we wanted to go a little deeper on that with Russell Brandom. He's been writing about this for The Verge. Hi, Russell.
Hi.
In this scenario, Google is Goliath, right?
I'm pretty sure Google's Goliath.
Tell me why you're pretty sure.
There's a lot of complaining about Google as sort of a prime source of piracy. And then a lot of the things that they talk about doing to Goliath are things that have actually happened to Google. So they're saying, oh, well, we're going to talk to the Mississippi Attorney General Jim Hood about sending a CID to Goliath, and we expect that to come out soon.
A CID is?
It's sort of, you know, we're looking into this and sort of give us these documents. And Google received one of those relating to pharmaceutical counterfeiting, not films, but something's happening there.
Correlation.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you describe what Google did a few months back and how it's impacted the Pirate Bay and sites like it in terms of demoting some search results?
they essentially, you know, there's an ongoing effort to, you know, when I search for 22 Jump Street, for instance, it should be sending me to the official sites and not to a site that's going to be facilitating any sort of illegal commerce.
But at the same time, that's sort of like against the philosophy of the company, right? Because the company is trying to give you the most useful information possible for what you're looking for.
Google sees this as a very technical problem. They say, look, this is what our users are searching for. So we're going to send them to things other people searched for. This isn't any different from any other search that happens on the internet.
What do we learn from these emails about the state of play in the battle that movie studios are waging to protect intellectual property?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson is Hollywood is still foaming at the mouth over this. And I think that's when you look sort of behind the curtain, you see a lot of really angry people over the state of play.
Does this make you think about any other kind of cultural clash between Silicon Valley and Hollywood?
One of the things you see is that they're just not speaking the same language. And I think you see this in the algorithms too, that they're saying, look, just fix the algorithm so that it doesn't direct people to pirated content.
And Google's like, wait, you mean like break the algorithm it doesn't work as
the
well?
The algorithm is sort of all they have. Like they've built this entire billion-dollar company on this algorithm. And then they look at, you know, the movie industry, which is a pretty big industry, but this is just a tiny portion of the searches we're doing. We're routing these huge quantities of information through across the entire world at these ludicrous speeds, and we're not going to just stop because some guy wants to watch 22 Jump Street for free. But then, you know, that's a dagger to the heart for Hollywood, and they just keep talking past each other.
Russell Brandom is a reporter for the website The Verge. Russell, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
All right, that's it for us today. Have you liked our Facebook page yet? If you do, we'll like you back in real life. But also, you'll get important This Is Awesome updates from us. Facebook.com/MarketplaceTech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.